take a deep breath, take the higher road. That's what they always say, as if they know the way. They won't take it from me. But don't ever doubt yourself, it's life ain't just a dream. You make your own, so kick and scream. The people move alike with a never-ending force. You never had the chance, so what you waiting for? The day has come, my friend, cause this is war.
Welcome to Nurses Out Loud. I am your host, Nurse April, and I am so excited because I have a guest with me today, someone I have been waiting to do a show with for a while, and that is Nurse Michelle, our Thursday host. So I finally got a chance to snag her, and we are just going to have a conversation and talk about what is it like to actually have to advocate for yourself within the healthcare system, and how does that affect you? How does that affect your family? The pressures that go along with really getting in there and battling the healthcare system and trying to save someone's life. And then we'll also kind of talk about a story that just happened recently where Michelle had to teach her husband how to advocate for his mom who just went into the hospital, and just the importance of having a script, knowing what you want to say, and really being strong enough and confident enough that you can do this, that you can fight for your rights. So again, I want to welcome you to Nurses Out Loud. Before I get started, I want to remind you that if you go to americaoutloud.com/nursesoutloud, you can send any of the nurses an email, and we really want to hear what's going on with you. So with that, I wanted to get started talking about, if you want, actually, Michelle, do you want to kind of give us an idea of what happened?
Oh, yes. With my husband's mom, yeah. What was going on was she's in a nursing home, and the nursing home reported that her blood pressure was really high and it needed to be seen at the hospital. And the hospital, after doing a basic assessment with her, made the phone call. I got to hear it on speaker. And when I heard the labs and what they were reporting, they said, you know, does your mom have congestive heart failure? And the answer is no, she's never had a cardiac condition ever. And they said, well, she looks like she has signs of congestive heart failure. And, you know, we think that she needs to have, you know, heart failure related treatments being done. And that's what we're going to move forward with. And that was the plan. And my husband went to the hospital to go see her. Mm-hmm. But before he left, I told him, I said, well, here's the thing. You know, your mom has had 4 of the COVID vaccines. And the reality is you know, and I know that your mom has never had a cardiac condition. There really isn't a family history of cardiac conditions. But we do know that according to the vaccines, there is a risk of cardiac problems happening. Mm-hmm. So we should go ahead and have them do a workup for pericarditis or myocarditis, just to make sure that if she really does have heart failure, it's not specifically caused by the vaccine.
Right.
And, you know, my husband, you know, I've been married to him for 35 years, and there's been a lot of medical problems with relatives of his throughout those years. And prior to 2020, he would really reluctantly take the counsel of his wife on these things because his siblings, he's the middle child, and they have a little bit more of a dominant force in swaying the parent. So I wasn't ever included on this conversation. So who was little old Michelle saying what should be done? And I often was ignored. Mm-hmm. And every time they ignored me, bad things happen. And I would almost have to say, I told you that was going to happen.
Yeah.
So this particular time it's after his mother had already been in the COVID unit in 2020. And I had demanded in 2020 that I didn't care if his brothers or him were going to call the hospital. If they didn't call the hospital, I was going to call the hospital and threaten to sue everybody. They didn't do what I told him, and he took me for seriously then. Mm-hmm. And she was able to be saved because a rare thing that I requested that the doctors refused but did anyways, and found the problem and solved it. spared her. And I think it made him a believer. So this time he did. And, you know, we can talk about that in just a moment if you like. But he took my advice, and it was very much outside of his comfort zone. It is not, everybody's not typically born with courage to do things like this, to confront authority. And it just happens to be something that maybe some of us are more natural at.
You know, I wonder if, you know, because I think about it, I myself get nervous too. And I work in healthcare, and I still find myself, when I think about confronting the medical providers and asking questions, I get nervous too, because I think we're afraid of sounding stupid or looking stupid, or maybe them getting angry with us. We're not experts at everything. And I think that there is this part of us that has shame and is afraid to, you know, say something stupid. But at some point, I guess for those of us who are more willing to step out there and ask questions and advocate, it's this realization that you have that if I don't do it, then it won't get done. And there's a possibility that somebody's going to get hurt, and it's somebody that I care about.
Exactly. And I will tell you that if it's somebody that I care about, if I have gone to war for total strangers and willing to go all the way to the top of management to do so, and I have met patients who love their person so well, not everyone is loved so well. And when people are loved so well by somebody, it does not matter how ignorant you are about the medical community. Your heart drives you to know that something is wrong. And when your conscience and your internal feelings let you know that something unjust is about, you're going to fight. You may not know the right medical things to ask for.
Right.
And I think that's what motivated me to really get out here and do what I'm doing now, is people need an advocate. Everybody needs somebody with medical knowledge who is there to help them.
I've had so many experiences throughout my lifetime where I've had encounters with the medical system. And being timid early on never bode well. It never did. I never got the outcomes that I wanted. And what I realized too was they did not care. Like, if something bad happened, there was no real apologies. There was nobody coming home to help, you know, deal with the situation. No, but there was no extension. It's kind of like, you know, they're shift workers, right? They clock in, they clock out, they care, then they don't care. And you're, you know, being left with, you know, picking up the remnants, picking up the pieces after someone that I care about was mistreated. It wasn't, I was like, not okay with that. And so I was so shy. I was so afraid early on in my career as a baby nurse and growing up. And I finally came to the conclusion that, you know what, they're not going to really care about what happens to my family member. They're also really not going to even remember me or them. So even if I sound stupid, or even if I don't know the right terms or any of that, it doesn't matter. I have to be courageous enough to speak up. My my baby, my youngest that I had, was born with a really rare birth defect. And prior to his birth, I felt like something was off. And I went around and around and around asking different providers to just kind of give me some suggestions. I gave them my symptoms that I was dealing with, and they kept blowing me off, and I kept saying something's wrong. And it's just that instinct, you know, you have that maternal instinct that something's off. And no one really cared. And I went through, I can't even count how many different providers I went to. And I finally kind of snuck around my primary provider and got one of the residents at another hospital to write a prescription for me to go and get an ultrasound. And this was towards the end of my pregnancy. And I went and had that ultrasound done. And the sonographer was looking at my son's, around his heart, around his chest cavity, and she was taking measurements. And I could see that she was measuring these cysts that were over his heart. And she was, she kept saying, "Are you sure they told you that everything is okay? Everything is normal," which I have never had a sonographer say that during an ultrasound.
Red flags.
Exactly. So you're immediately like, oh, okay, what's going on? And I'm asking her, and she just keeps on doing the measurements, and she's looking around at different things. And she finally says, "Let me just go talk to the doctor." And so she steps away. She goes out, talks to the maternal fetal medicine doctor, which is the specialist. And she comes back and she says, "Okay, you can go." And I'm like, "Okay, what do you mean I can go? What did you see? what am I missing? And she was like, oh, you know, the doctor will, you'll have a report and then your practitioner can go over it with you. I ended up going back and I was seeing a nurse midwife at the time who happened to be my nursing school professor. And I had mentioned it to her what happened. And she, I think, was put off by the fact that I even went behind her back and got this ultrasound done. So she really, you know, and there was no report back. And so it was just this continued, let's just keep watching, because I had hyperemesis with that pregnancy. I wasn't gaining weight and just a lot of things just felt off. And so about a week and a half later, we finally did an induction. And when my son was born, he, like, the room started to fill. And you're a labor and delivery nurse, so you know.
Right, yes.
If it's a good delivery, then it's, you know, you get the baby's on your chest, everything is good. And this is my fourth, so I'm expecting them to just put him on my chest and let's, you know, be done. It's a quick delivery. Well, they take him over to the warmer, and then they call in the NICU doctor, and then they call in, you know, some more nurses. Next thing I know, the room is full. And I'm just laying there thinking, okay, I'll be patient because I know eventually they'll come over and tell me what's going on.
Right.
And eventually the pediatrician wrapped him up and brought him over to me. And she said, you know, she kind of unpeeled the blankets and just said, you know, this is what we found. And she unpeels the blankets and she shows me my son, who has this mass over his chest, his left chest wall. And you could see a bunch of lumps from all of the cysts that the sonographer had been measuring. And then she peeled back the blanket some more. And you see that he has these tumors all over his arm. And then she peels back the blanket all the way. And you see his hand. And his hand was enormous. It was very large.
Wow.
And she said, we don't know what it is. We don't know what's going on. And also he was having trouble maintaining his oxygen. So they wanted to take him over to the NICU to observe him and to try to figure out what it was. And so then, of course, everyone is scrambling to figure out, okay, she had an ultrasound a few weeks ago. What did the ultrasound show? And they finally were able to pull up the report, and the ultrasound showed that everything was normal.
No way.
Yes. Totally normal, which, of course, I have records. And I always tell people, keep records of everything, because I can look at the CD, I can look at the ultrasound myself, and you can see the cysts. I'm not trained to do ultrasounds, but I could see all the different cysts.
Right.
And so it was this, you know, surprise, here's your son. He has this malformation, it's a lymphatic malformation he was born with. And we don't know what to tell you. Good luck. And I remember just that night experiencing this like shock and loneliness, because after it was all said and done, they just left me there with no answers. And going home from that and having to be the advocate for him, because, you know, they're not invested, right? They're not invested in your life and in your story. And so I had to find support. There never was a social work consult. It was like, I had to find my own doctors and I had to find my own hospital system that I trusted. And I had to fight back all of the doctors who, you know, wanted to practice on him because it was so rare. It was like, this would be a great thing for them to add to their resume.
Yeah, this is what's unfathomable about the medical profession, because I mean, I have six kids. Two girls entertained the idea of going into the medical profession. Mm-hmm. The oldest one, I was sure was not what she was supposed to do. And I remember I've said the same thing to both of them. Do you feel a burden to relieve the oppressed and suffering of this world? Because every generation is going to have the dying, the suffering, the sick, and those being born and needing help to be brought into this world. So every generation is going to have people called into this profession, and it is a calling. Mm-hmm. Do you genuinely feel a calling into this profession? Because if it isn't that, you do not go into this profession, because otherwise we get a whole bunch of people who are in the medical profession, perhaps, you know, doctors that are out there that maybe thought it was prestigious or lucrative, mm-hmm. or a way to be financially, get the financial things that they want in their future. But when you meet the doctors and the nurses that you know have a heart and a compassion for your suffering, and they want to help relieve your suffering, you know you're dealing with somebody who's been called in this generation to be a part of that. And when you don't have those people present, you are, like you felt, alone.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's heartbreaking. And it's one of those things that you realize, okay, there's a mourning that takes place. You know, you had this idea of how you thought your life was going to go. And that life that you had, that vision and you know, the hopes and dreams have died. And you have to mourn that and then proceed with a new life. That's you know, things are all different and things have changed. And even, you know, for me, I think that there was also this devastation of the healthcare system that I had for so long looked up to and revered completely let me down. And that is another heartbreak that I think a lot of us as healthcare providers right now, having gone through COVID, if they hadn't experienced the heartbreak of a healthcare system that deserted them or that actually harmed them or their family, then they still had this abundance of trust and pride that was destroyed during COVID.
And honestly, being married to my husband, having a person in my life intimately for 35 years, watching the way that he has responded to all of his relatives when the doctors or nurses said something, there was never any questioning of the system. Mm-hmm. And I would stand there and just be completely befuddled with their silence and just acceptance of it. And I have tried to analyze it for 35 years to say, what is it with y'all that makes you not question anything? Yeah. Did you not hear what they said? There needed to be a few questions about that. So if you're prone toward that, and even being married to somebody like me who questions, and don't get me wrong, with the personality that I am now, you would think I was this rebel child who resisted authority and was in trouble all the time. I was actually quite the opposite. I was a person who always sought to do good and do good by others. Mm-hmm. So actually what motivates me is not to rebel against authority, but justice, a sense of justice that right needs to have occurred or that the wrong can't occur. And in the case of my husband's mother in this particular case, I knew she didn't have a cardiac history and that was relevant. You don't say congestive heart failure to somebody unless there is a reason to say it. Mm-hmm. And I said to him, I wrote out words for him. I had learned how to do this over the years. And I said, just walk up to them. I said, the best way to do it is tell the nurse what your request is. And I've written it out for you. Just spell it for her and everything and just do it very matter of factly and just say, I'd like you to do this. My wife is a nurse and she knows about these things. We know that the COVID vaccines have caused harm to the hearts. And let's just make sure that there's no blood clotting issues contributing to this. And this is the labs I'd like you to ask the doctor about. So she takes those to the doctor. And then, of course, the doctor comes in to confront my husband, who is not one that's comfortable with that. Mm-hmm. And he said it was, you know, his heart just was beating terribly inside of himself. Mm-hmm. And it was just very outside of his comfort zone. The doctor didn't even know what the names of them were. Like, he mm-hmm. didn't even know what, like, galactin was. Had never heard of it. Mm-hmm. And but he submitted to a few of them. Primarily, the one we were pushing for was the D-dimer. And they were about to send this woman back to the nursing home saying all is well. Mm-hmm. And they got the D-dimer back and it was significantly elevated that there were clots in her. Mm-hmm. So they actually intimidated my husband and said, well, you know, if we do the D-dimer and it shows that she has clotting, we'll have to do a CT angiogram, which will put your mother at risk. And I asked my husband, I said, please tell me how you felt in that moment, because if I had been there, I might've had a fight. Because literally that person was saying to my husband was, okay, now if we actually find out something's wrong with your mom, you know, we might actually have to do a procedure that might put her even more at risk. And I'm like, so in other words, we should leave the problem and never know it's there. It's just so dumb.
Right.
So if they find out it's very elevated and they have to go do the CT angiogram, and they basically wanted my husband to feel guilty that if anything happened to her, I've had probably a CT angiogram once a year for the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. Never have I felt like my life was in danger. Well, there was once, but it was the error of a human, because every time you get in a hospital, there's always that potential. But reality is that was absurd. And in the end of the story, they were humbled to find a 2-inch mass inside of her lungs.
Wow.
So the reality is that nurses or anybody out there listening, if you've ever been the one that spoke up for somebody and something was found, you know that following your conscience is relevant. Mm-hmm. Now, when it pertains to this COVID fiasco we've all just been through, what I learned so sorrowfully the hard way is that people were finding out that I was somebody helping people with COVID. And as it evolved through 2021 and Delta came in, what started happening was really bad hospitalizations where the stupid advice that was being given from the public health authorities was, you know, stay home, take Tylenol and cough syrup, and go to the hospital if you have difficulty breathing. Well, if you have a respiratory lethal virus and you stay home and just take Tylenol and cough syrup, there's a really good chance you're going to end up in the hospital. Right. So they end up in the hospital. And for people who don't know, some of us, like myself, as soon as I was brought to the COVID unit in 2020, when I presented to the hospital, I was met by the National Guard. And nobody was allowed to come in with me. I had to go in by myself. So immediately the sick and vulnerable are without an advocate. Yeah. And I'm a person who had the medical knowledge to at least know how to fight for myself. But I was the patient and I was compromised. And my IQ was actually compromised by COVID. So I was having to depend on my own sick IQ to defend myself. And that is a very vulnerable place to be. Yeah. So it became coming out of the COVID unit myself and the nightmare my eyes witnessed to what I had to do to save myself to make me say when I got out of it and I was on a walker for a month and oxygen for 3 months, I woke up and said, if the medical people have to fight this hard and almost can't get help, what is going to happen to the American population? I need to start some kind of platform that teaches people how to advocate for themselves to stay out of the hospital. And by 2021 center of that, maybe midsummer, I realized I had to come up with an entire how to get yourself out of the hospital alive protocol. Mm-hmm. And then it was when to call me and to get you out of the hospital alive protocol. Because sometimes the person was so desperate. I was just Nurse Michelle. I was this enigma that would call every authority in the hospital. And I'm telling you what, I think I scared them all to death. And that was totally my intention. By the time that I got to the top of the authority, I was like, you better listen to me.
Yes.
If I am all the way at the top and I am telling you the same thing I've told everybody up to here, which is the patient's wishes that you are ignoring and dismissing. If you do not do what I am telling you, I assure you, a lawyer is coming here and you are going to lose money. And I don't honestly think I could have done that, I'll be honest with you, in face person.
Yeah.
But I did it completely powerfully in phone person.
Wow. That's impressive.
Yeah. And it worked to some degree. But when I would see people die anyways, I can tell you about that, you know, if you want to hear about that.
Yeah,
but,
I do.
So I had a nightmare story happen that was a big wake-up call for me because in Delta, people were actually really dying. And let's remember, Delta came after the vaccine because everything was really getting better at the end of 2020. And all of a sudden, the vaccine rollout happens. And the next thing you know, we have this Delta surge coming. And all these people who shouldn't be so vulnerable were suddenly really having bad cases. And I would get calls from random people through my platform. And it was through digital media. Nobody knew who I was. I'm just Nurse Michelle. I kept that anonymity. Mm-hmm. But then people in my community knew who I was. So they would call and say, Michelle, you know, somebody here in this hospital is such and such. Can you do something? And I would give them the protocol and say, do this and everything will be fine. Just do what I tell you. Just ask for these things and all will be well. And for the most part, it was the FLCCC guidelines, right? And I gave them links and print offs and, you know, tell them what to print off and literally gave them the words to say to the professionals. And the ones who were really scared, I would give them voice clips. And I say, okay, now go stand in front of the mirror and you say what I'm about to say to you to the mirror, because you're going to have to say it to the doctor. And don't be afraid. They're just humans just like you. They're not anybody above you. And it gave them some bravery. But in this one particular case, I kept getting different calls from a similar hospital. And I thought, wow, there's a lot of people in this age group in this hospital. I had no idea all these people knew the same person. And they were actually calling about the same 40-year-old woman. Oh. And this went over 4 weeks. Okay. So like 1 week, somebody's calling me about a 40-year-old woman at this hospital. And then the second week, somebody's calling me about a 40-something-year-old woman in this hospital. And it took the fourth call that from a dear friend. And I said, wait a minute. Is this so-and-so? Is this person so-and-so that you and I know? And I'm like, nobody's told me this is so-and-so. And I said, I've been called by four or five people over the last 4 weeks and given this same protocol. Are you telling me nobody's done what I told them? You know, it blew my mind because all I could do, honestly, as a giving you free medical help is just tell you what you have to do to advocate for yourself. But if you don't do it, what can I do? Right. So I couldn't fathom that nobody was doing it. And what I learned, and this is hard to confess, and I hope that some people don't hear this, but the spouse of the dying was not a bold person willing to confront the medical community. And he was the only one who had power to effect change. He was the spouse. The mother was not the spouse. She did not have any authority. The best friend of this woman who would have died for her did not have any authority. And these people literally were doing everything to save this woman. I'm like, wow, how blessed to have so many people love you this much that they want to fight for you. And it's still not working what's happening. So in the last days, she was on a vent by this point, because when I first got her, she was on airflow talking to her family from the COVID unit, perfectly stable. She should not have died. Okay. There's nothing that should have, it should have been stopped, but nobody implemented the protocol. And so here we are at this nightmare phase. Nobody's doing what I'm guiding them to do. There was nurses even in this family. They could not activate the hospital to change. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden her daughter, the dying woman's daughter, is in a wreck and she's killed.
Oh my gosh.
Her body is at a hospital near, I think, where her mom is. And I said to the family, this is going to be very tragic for me to tell you this, but her organs literally may save her mom's life. Let's find out if she's a cross, a match. Let's type her and find out if she could be a donor for your mom. Well, I didn't know that all through 2020 and 2021, I was finding out about more and more NIH guidelines that were actually contributing to people's harm. And what one of the new NIH guidelines was that I never knew existed was that any corpse that came into the hospital had to be tested for COVID. And if it tested positive, of course, they would get funding, right? Mm-hmm. But more importantly, it couldn't donate organs. So within a week, both of them were dead and buried.
When that
happened, it was a big wake up call to me. And I just cried out to the Lord. I'm like, okay, Lord, I'm literally giving all of myself to fight. Mm-hmm. And what's happening, you know, these people are still dying. The hospitals will not hear, or some people will not fight for the people that they love because they're too afraid. And I'll tell you, after, you know, like a week of depression about it, it really hit me hard because my daughter had worked with this girl and she's gone. My daughter had been on the same four-wheeler that this girl died on in the same horse park that my daughter worked in. So here it was just so shocking and so personal. And what I feel like the Lord gave me was this dead person is, let me just make it spiritual for a moment, is a child of God who is not a little light. This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine, is a burning torch. And their last act on this earth was to shine a great light on the darkness and cast it out. And it's sitting in medical records called their medical record. And you better get that dead person's medical record, possess it as soon as you possibly can, because within that medical record is where we're going to uncover the malicious malfeasance and the evil that has been done. Every documentation of a family member asking for something that was refused. And we're going to take it to court and we're going to get justice.
That's right. For the crimes against humanity. We're going to go to break really quick. And then on the other side of this break, I want to talk more about how you deal with this. Like, how do you cope with the heaviness that comes along with trying to advocate for patients? Before we go to break, I want to remind you to support our show sponsors. The only way we're able to get the word out on this platform is with your help. When you invest your dollars with the companies who support this freedom movement, you're helping us spread this critical message across the globe.
It's time and this is war.
Cold and flu season is here. Wouldn't it be great if you had a way to minimize airborne viral threats? Well, now there is, and it's a povidone iodine-based antiviral nasal spray called Cofix RX. You might even say it's just what the doctor ordered. To reduce your chance of getting hurt, you wear a safety belt when you're driving. To limit sun damage, you wear sunscreen on the beach. Cofix RX is just like that. It's an additional layer of protection. It's sold by thousands of pharmacists and medical doctors nationwide. It's made right here in the USA. Again, it's a povidone iodine-based antiviral nasal spray. You've heard them talk about it here on the Out Loud Network over and over again. Check out CofixRx.com. That's CofixRx.com for a retailer near you, or use coupon code OUTLOUD for 20% off at CofixRx.com.
Here on America Out Loud, we emphasize optimal health, and air is the most essential element for life. The average person inhales over 35 pounds of air every day, yet we seldom think about how to rid the air of pathogens swiftly and safely when we need to. The Genesis Fogger Plus HOCL is the only way to quickly and naturally restore air to its optimal condition. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud for a free ebook on everything you need to know about HOCL and receive a 15% discount on the Genesis Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you'll be ready for what's next.
Maintaining a strong immune system has never been more critical. Nutrition company Healthy Cell created Immune Super Boost to help you strengthen your immunity, unlike other supplements that don't work. Immune Super Boost is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra absorption of science-backed nutrients proven to support immunity, like vitamin C, D3, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com. Code Out Loud.
America Out Loud beats to the pulse of our nation. We know when you're angry, you're troubled, confused, glad, and thankful. Well, we know you because we are you. AmericaOutLoud.com. Join us as we explore the most important issues of our time. America Out Loud Talk Radio. The liberty and justice for all.
Time and this is love. Welcome back. I am here with Nurse Michelle, and we're talking about the heavy burden that comes with trying to advocate for yourself and for your family members, but also the burden that comes with your, or the burden that it has on your family and on your emotional well-being. Your relationships. Have you noticed anything, you know, changing for you within your marriage or within your relationship with your children?
Well, because our family has already been in a war for probably 8 years with the vaccines court, a lot of people don't know there is a federal vaccine court of special masters. And if they go to my show, they'll see that I have 20 vaccine questions for medical professionals. And those questions are meant to expose how ignorant the medical profession actually is about vaccines. And I did not know that.
I actually listened to those episodes, and I learned so much from listening to that. And I encourage everyone to go and check those out. They're on podcast, because you will learn a lot.
Yeah. I mean, and here's the thing, even an attempt to teach those 20 questions, that is just a drop in the bucket of what there is to know about vaccines. And what I want people to understand is that all of us don't know something at all times. We are not, I could be an expert in anything, but I don't know everything about everything at all times. Right. So the humility, the necessity of having humility and accepting that there's always something to learn, there's always somewhere to grow. And any medical professional you're talking to is not all knowing at any given time. And the best ones will let you know, I've never heard of that.
Yes.
Tell me more. If you've researched because you've been dedicated, tell me, mother, what you've learned about your own personal child, like what you had to do yourself. Mm-hmm. I had to do with my child. So I had a vaccine injured daughter when she was 16 years old. And what I found out, the nightmare horror way, was that not a single medical professional was qualified for her. Not a single doctor was willing to admit they weren't qualified. They just kept pushing me away and pushing me to another person until I finally was put in the front of the chief of epilepsy at the leading teaching hospital in the state of Georgia. And by providence, I was put in her presence. And she said to me, you know, your daughter has a neuroimmune mediated brain injury. Now, that's a mouthful for somebody who's not medical, but even for somebody who is medical, it's still a mouthful. So because we're all at least understand medical terminology, you can just break it down and say, okay, so there's a neurological, immunological, something to happening to the brain. Mm-hmm. And it was caused, it was mediated, caused by one of the things she just said, neuroimmune. Mm-hmm. And I said, so you're saying that the vaccine caused a brain injury. Isn't that what you're saying to me? And she says, yes. And I said, okay, well, give me your best immunologist in this hospital, being that it's the best hospital in the state. Mm-hmm. There is no one qualified here, Michelle. Mm-hmm. So here I am, a professional. She's a professional. And she's telling me that the leading hospital in the state isn't qualified. So I said, okay, well, tell me the best one. She said in her facility, I said, tell me the best one in your state. And she says, there is no one qualified in the state. The only place for your daughter is for her spinal fluid to go to the University of Pennsylvania. And she's going to have to go to the neuroimmunology department, where they will do a full workup of the autoimmune encephalitis panel, which is cutting edge science that really had, her injury was in 2013. And this started getting really published in 2015. And this is probably 2017 in the journey of our struggle with her at this point. Mm-hmm. And by this point, our daughter had lost her ever living mind. She was severe psychosis, got a dementia diagnosis, severe myasthenia gravis. She had a movement disorder called chorea, C-H-O-R-E-A, athetosis, which is a movement disorder affiliated with, you know, significant cerebral brain damage. Mm-hmm. So all of that appeared after the vaccine. So I knew that all these systemic things started after a vaccine, but they required so many multiple specialists because they affected so many areas of her body. And she was having psychiatric issues at the same time. It was just a nightmare. But thankfully, the psychiatrist that we were seeing had just read a book called Brain on Fire. And Brain on Fire was literally my daughter's story. And he pretty much saved her life because he was able to recognize it was a medical condition, mm-hmm. that she was having instead of a psychological condition. Yeah, she was having psychological symptoms, but it was caused by her physical damage that had happened. Mm-hmm. So how did it play out in my family? Well, I found myself as a person filing a lawsuit in the federal vaccine court. And my husband is not a person that is up for a fight or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So there, you know, it's me doing countless hours of work, you know, not doing this or that I normally would do. So obviously it put a strain on the household because all of a sudden I'm doing all this massive work for a lawyer to get them proof and gather medical data. And once I started gathering, this was the big wake up call for me about medical records. You do not know what a doctor has written about you until you read it. And I assure you they're human, and you will be astounded how sometimes they're actually dictating your notes about somebody else. Oh, yeah. And you have to call and say, I'm sorry, but that's not me you're talking about. So might want to make a correction. And you do have that right. And any appointment you ever have, as soon as you leave an appointment, you should go to the checkout and say, what do I need to sign to release records? Are you going to mail it to me or do I have to pick it up? You're not asking permission. It's yours. Get it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So collecting all that data. And eventually what would happen in federal vaccine court, I would wake up to another nightmare, is that lawyers are paid even if they quit and leave you abandoned. And after a couple of years, mine did quit and he got paid $75,000 from the federal vaccine court and he got to move on to the next person. And mm-hmm. I was left to be a pro se lawyer. So in my marriage, my husband was like, okay, isn't this a sign for you to quit now? And it was not. Quit is not in my system at all.
Yeah.
And so I was in war with them up until COVID hit. And they then, you know, kind of went dysfunctional themselves because of all, they were federal. So they were closing their system and all that. But the impact on our family was her impact. She was a medical nightmare. Mm-hmm. And our family was living through a person with severe medical alterations and having to cope with it.
And so this is something that really, to me, when it comes to advocacy, it requires a team. It's like a relay race and you run as long as you can, but you at some point have to be able to pass that baton off to someone else to take over, to give you a chance to rest emotionally, yeah. physically, spiritually, because it is such an emotional battle that you have to deal with. When my son, after he was born and we were trying to find, and I say we, in air quotes, me, was trying to find the provider who was qualified. And we struggled because, of course, with insurance companies, they want you to stay in network. They want you to see the doctors that they've already agreed to have, you know, specific negotiated discounts with, and they want to do this care as cheaply as possible. And for my son, there was no one in our network who could actually take care of him. And it was, I had to really press these doctors who would come in the room so cocky and so confident. And when you ask them questions and you ask them, well, how many of the patients like my son have you treated? That's an important question that you want to ask providers. And you don't want, honestly, we have to practice on patients in healthcare. That's how we learn to get better. There are times when you do not want to be the practice dummy. And in my case with my son, his condition was so rare that they had one opportunity to go in there and operate, because with lymphatic tissue, it is very, very difficult to see. It is, I mean, right now I do a lot of robotic surgeries, and we look at it under 10 time magnification on the screen when we do robotic surgeries. And it is still really hard to see, but it's also an amazing and fascinating system. I mean, I love it. I love it so much. It's so amazing. But when you're doing surgery, I mean, it requires microsurgery. It requires someone who's dedicated and fully educated and experienced and aware of the differences in the tissue type. Because once you go in there and operate one time, after that, there's so much scarring that's left over that you can't go back in again. And so the risk of letting someone who had no experience operate on him would have been the difference between him keeping his arm or losing his arm, keeping his life and losing his life. And so that is really, for me, when I finally stood up and started, you know, advocating and pushing back, and I mean, always respectfully, but also feeling like a mama bear, like, this is my child and you're not going to hurt my child.
Right.
And, but that did take a toll on, I mean, it took me a year to find someone, and we were looking globally and finally found somebody who was an expert. And, but they were in Boston. So we had to go to Boston Children's Hospital. And at the time I was living in Michigan. So a lot of traveling back and forth for his care, but the insurance company, which was my employer, we had a hospital-based insurance. They did not want me to go out of network. And so then I had to spend all this time trying, you know, you get a case manager, and I mean, no offense to my fellow nurses out there, but these case managers are useless. Their goal is not to help you as a patient. Their goal is to help the insurance company that they work for save money.
Yeah.
And so there was this, I was constantly on the phone with her crying, you know, begging for her to help. And that was never her intent. And I did not know that at the time. And so when I finally started pushing back, and I had this idea, okay, the last thing I can think of to do is to tell my story. And so I created this chart for my son. And because I had been keeping records of everything from the time I was pregnant until after he was born, and everything that had gone on, and every doctor we had seen, hundreds of doctors at this point, every time he got stuck with a needle, I mean, I had just documented it all, because at that point I felt like that was the only control I had, you know.
Right. You're actually making the documentation for the future research of the next child that comes along.
Exactly. And so, you know, I finally put it all together, and I made it look just like a chart. Like if we were, that was back before everything was in the computer. So, you know, you'd pull off your chart off of the chart rack, and you have all your different sections. And I had all of the sections, but in the very front, I had a huge 8x10 picture of my son. And then you open it up, and then there's another picture of him from when he was born, and just all these pictures to really like jump at me, because you can't help but to see it. And it's, I mean, you see it and it's like, whoa.
Makes him human.
Yeah, totally. And just told his story, just a brief story of like who he was, what he had experienced so far. And I also just kind of let them know where we didn't know if he had tumors. We didn't know if he had cancer. We didn't know what was going on, because we kept getting shuffled around, and they were like, go see this person, go see this person, you know, but they wouldn't let us go to the person who was the actual specialist. Well, I decided to take that chart, and I made copies, and I took one and I dropped it off at the president's office, the president of the hospital. Took it to the vice president's office, dropped one off for him. I took it to the legal department. I took it to the marketing department. And then I took it to the head of the insurance company. So five charts went to all of those people. And the next day, I got a call from the vice president of the hospital who said that we could go. We could finally go. That was like...
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, a year of fighting and a year of and then having to go through all of that. Finally, they say you can go. But at that, you have this kind of like you're at the high, the top, the peak of the mountain. And then it's like you have this emotional crash. Because it's like, why did it have to take all of that? And yeah. So then for me and at the time I was married to his dad, so my ex-husband, it took its toll. It definitely took its toll on our family and on our marriage, because I had to fight that battle alone, because he, similar to your husband, you know, he's not up for a battle. He's not up to debate or to push back on healthcare providers, because he didn't know, he didn't understand right. the language and everything. So he didn't know when he was supposed to push back. And so it was a really lonely road to walk. And it really did cause a chasm, because you can't be the sole provider of someone who requires so much care and it not just wear you out.
I think that we are going to have, there's so much mental health impact from 2020 to now, mm-hmm. not only the propaganda and the damage that's been done by all of it and the things that the students have experienced, but the family members who have lost their loved ones who were prevented from getting inside that hospital. I had people who were literally given a restraining order, couldn't even park in the hospital parking lot, much less enter the lobby to inquire about their loved ones. Anybody who was only allowed at the deathbed, finally, when they're in their last breathing hour after fighting for them for who knows how many weeks, never getting the hospital to honor a single request, the energy that was sucked out of them. I have a lot of people who fought well and were able to, I finally learned eventually about the power of attorney, that don't you dare go into a hospital without a power of attorney with at least two names on them. And one of those names better not be somebody who can, profit from you dead. Mm-hmm. And everybody's kind of blown away with my thinking that. But it was a whole nother perspective that hit me. It's like, you really want somebody who really wants you to be alive.
That is so true.
That power of attorney. And then it was, my word, how much important it is to keep these people out of the hospital, because it isn't looking good for people who do end up in it.
Yes, absolutely. So true. And another thing, when it comes to picking the power of attorney, make sure you pick someone who has fight in them. So that may not be your spouse. That may Absolutely. Not be, your parent. It could be a cousin or an aunt or a friend, but it has to be someone who is not afraid to fight.
Yes. I gave them a list and I said, when you come in, you give them your power of attorney and here's your list. You can change it however you want to, but here's the basics that you're not going to accept. What you do demand and what you do want, and just be very matter of fact about it. Just hand it to them and say, this is what I expect of you. Mm-hmm. And just pause and let them feel the power of your request.
Yep. Yep. And don't be ashamed at all, because they will do their best to try to shame you. I honestly think I had a patient recently who maybe she's one of your followers, and she took your advice, because she actually came in with her medical power of attorney and she had listed out everything that she wanted. And one of those things was, if there's any talk about vaccine, you need to discuss it with this person. She was very adamant about not being vaccinated. And she had written in there that, she did not want any vaccinated blood. So if she had to have a blood transfusion, she wanted to make sure that it was unvaccinated. Now, I was so proud of her. I was just like, this is my person right here. I was so proud. But listening to my colleagues who were making fun of her and saying things about how basically, she had this unrational fear of the healthcare system. And I was thinking, are you guys crazy? Like, are we, we're living in a completely like different world right now, where there's half of society is completely still trusting of the healthcare system and doesn't understand why the other half of society is looking like, I'm afraid to even step foot in this place.
Yes. I want to empower people to trust their gut, trust their conscience, and trust the love they have for the person they're wanting to fight for. I have a story of an amazing woman whose husband was a fit 50-year-old surfer in California. They had already prepared all their COVID basket. They were as prepared as anybody could be, but that in their super health, they went off for a trip that was maybe 12 hours from home, a road trip. And they got sick while away, and they had not taken their COVID basket that they had prepared. Mm-hmm. And that was another turning point for me to start teaching people that if you travel, you must have your travel COVID basket. Let me tell you what to put in your travel COVID basket. It was because of this case that happened. And so they thought, oh, we're strong and healthy. We'll just wait it out a day or two in the hospital. I'm sorry, in the hotel. And by the time they decided to make their way home was day three of COVID, and they were starting to decline, and they had this long journey ahead. And it, when by the time they got him home at day five, he was hospital material, this very fit man. Mm. And her story, I will eventually interview him on my show for Thursdays, because the love of this woman, the hospital, in her own words, literally tried to murder her husband through a pride of one doctor determined to keep everything away from her, that she fought and she was able to be by his bedside because she was going to war and make their lives a living hell if they did not. Mm-hmm. And they had him on an NG tube, which is feeding somebody through their nose, a tube down their nose into their stomach. And she says, well, he's used to having smoothies every day. So by golly, that woman, she crushed every medicine they denied. She crushed every mm-hmm. medicine they denied and put it in his smoothie. That's and right. She gave him every medicine that they refused him to have. And she got that man out alive. And I was able to meet them to help them during the recovery for him to gain back his muscle mass mm-hmm. because he was so weak after he was, I think he was in the hospital on a ventilator for 100 days.
Oh, I mean, my gosh.
An insane nightmare story. And literally, I mean, it's a love story to me because the love this woman had to, she was so committed to protecting her husband that she did everything it took to do so because she was up against tyranny mm-hmm. and she was not going to let the rules or the hospital or any authority keep her from saving her husband. And I'm not saying that those who didn't do what she did, you know, failed in some way. I'm saying that what she had to go up against in a California hospital mm. was tremendous, and she had the fortitude to do it. And she'd already been informed. She'd already been tagged into me and other people that were out there helping educate the masses, though we were censored. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She was, you know, she was able to be informed, and because she was informed, she was empowered.
Yeah.
And because she was empowered, she was strong. And, you know, I would encourage everybody to just being prepared is one way of being empowered. You know, that's mm-hmm. one way. The other one is the power of attorney is one way of being empowered. But the other way is to just look in the mirror and say, I trust myself.
Yeah.
I trust myself. I trust my conscience to fight for myself and for my family.
Right. And you don't have to have all the right words to say. And really, it's not even up to you to have all the right words to say. It's up to the professionals to be able to explain it in a way that you completely understand what they're doing. And if you have questions and they haven't explained it clearly enough, then it's still on them to make it make sense. And a lot of times, one of the problems that we struggle with in healthcare is we don't understand it well enough to be able to explain it.
That's right. That's right. Such a valid point. And honestly, people forget that there is a literacy rate in our country that's a 7th grade literacy rate. So all medical data is supposed to be presented at a minimum, I'm sorry, at a maximum mm-hmm. of a 7th grade learning level. And wow. some others agree that it may be closer to 4th grade, that there may be a larger population that are closer to a 4th grade, which is a shame and a reproach upon the public school system.
Yes.
But the reality is if you are a nurse out there listening or a doctor out there listening, it's time to put away your pride and accept that your patient is owed your education to help them feel empowered, not to be convinced to do what you want them to do.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting you said that because I've had this conversation with providers over the years, and it always amazes me. People, of course, when the internet came out and people, you know, the providers, especially the doctors, were really frustrated. They were angry that that patients would go online, and they even still to this day make fun of patients who go to Dr. Google. But, it, you know, it's almost like they have this sense of it's mine. All the medical data is mine, and I'm not sharing it. I'm not willing to explain to you what I'm doing. I'm not going to give you informed consent because you just need to trust me. And I'm like, well, I don't understand. Why do we get so angry with patients who ask questions?
Right. Yeah, it's so intimidating. And if they're going to go out there and try to say any of these medical terms, of course they're going to mess up in saying it. But mm-hmm. but I tell people, I'm like, just go ahead and have it written down in advance and go in there and just hand them the paper and make them read it themselves. And, you know, you've already done your work. Or send it to them in advance through a patient portal and say, listen, yes, I know I'm not a doctor, but I've done my own research. I'm dedicated to my own health or my loved one's health. Please just read this and please explain it to me when I come in your presence.
Absolutely. I love that. I think that's a great idea. And then just people have to understand that there is going to be this pride. Their pride is going to be injured when you challenge them, because you may be presenting them with something that they haven't heard of before. And you know, they've been taught to be all powerful, all knowing, and that's how they're trained. And so if they didn't have answers when they were going through their training, they were mocked and ridiculed by their attendings, you know? So this is something that, unfortunately, it is a part of the way, it's a part of the culture within the healthcare system. And so I think a lot of it is just a reflex, right? They'll be frustrated. They'll, you know, there will be eye rolling. There will be some contempt because you're calling them out and you're exposing some of the gaps that there might be in their knowledge, but that's okay. If you can create a space where they feel safe, and let them know, like, for yourself to be humble and say, this is the information, I don't understand it, but can you explain it to me? And, right. and letting them know, I respect your opinion. I respect your training and your education. And I'm really relying on you to take care of the person whom I love, you know, who I care for.
A way to do it that makes it less intimidating to the provider, I think people need to be very familiar with their patient portals, and to learn to say as much as possible with as little words as possible, and say, I read about this. It matches the symptoms of what is going on in my life. And I want you to validate whether or not I'm on the right path. I think it's credible. When we come in and talk, can we talk about it? And then the doctor should have already looked at it by the time you come in, and be able to say to you, completely confident for you, that this is why that person knows it is inaccurate, or yes, you're on the right path. Let's go with you. Because you know you. So they should at least trust your gut that you're knowing something. You may have found something. And there's a lot of very vital websites out there, that symptom checkers and things like that, even on Mayo Clinic site, that you can narrow down yourself with your own symptoms and kind of get at least 10 things it could possibly be, which in my case has always been pretty close to accurate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you know yourself the best. I mean, you spend the most time with yourself. So you need to be an expert with your health and your well-being. I am so glad that we got a chance to do this show together, and I hope that we get to do more, because I know that we have a lot of things in common. I think we've been cut from the same cloth. And so I definitely want to spend more time with you talking about some of the things that we've experienced, even from like our L&D days. We have run out of time. So I am going to go ahead and close out the show and just let everybody know that Nurses Out Loud is on Monday through Friday. You have a different nurse host every day. Our show airs 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time with an encore at 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can also hear us on podcast. So usually about a day or two after the show airs live, you'll be able to hear us on podcast. Go back and listen to some of the episodes and catch up and see what's going on. We have been having some incredible interviews with some incredible people who have amazing stories to tell about their COVID experience and life experiences. So please go take a listen to those episodes. And don't forget that you can find those episodes either by going to the AmericaOutloud.com website and you go up and look under shows, or you can also go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, any of those apps. This is Nurses Out Loud, and our goal is to shine a light in the darkness.
It's time.